afternoon. Welcome to the panel, RNZ National with us. First time on the panel, Anna Dean, who is a former director of an agency, ad and PR agency called Double Denim, and Tim Watkin, who is a journalist, executive producer of podcasts and series here at RNZ. Big response to Lego. Meccano is great things that for things that move, and learning about Bose notation. Why Bailey Bridges stay up? What are Bailey Bridges?
Bridges made by someone called Bailey.
No. We'll find out. But here's this, and I'll tell you at 4:30. Someone reminded me, New Zealand manufactured its own version of Lego and Meccano style of products. It was produced on the West Coast.
No.
It was very famous. Text us, 2101, pop it up on Twitter. What do you think it was called? And you'll know it. I'll tell you what it is at 4:30. First, though, the news out that New Zealand is temporarily suspending travellers from India from the 11th to the 28th of April. Travel into Aotearoa from India, including for New Zealand citizens and residents, is being temporarily suspended because of high numbers of COVID-19 cases, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said this afternoon. There are 23 new cases in managed isolation, 17 arrived from India. With us for a brief word is Robert Kahn, the CEO at Radio Tirana. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So, look, first time New Zealand has stopped citizens or residents from returning. So, news just out. What do you make of it?
Look, I think a couple of things have to be clarified. Just in terms of flights from India, there's no direct flights from India to New Zealand. So you have to come through other countries, and from what I gather, these returnees have come via Saudi Arabia or the United Arab Emirates. So it's part of travelling through. They've come through another country to get to New Zealand. So I think it's important to note that that the transmission could have happened anywhere. It probably happened in India. It could have happened on the way. In the press conference today, they were talking about the fact that it could have actually could have happened on the way to the airport.
Yes.
So, look, I think further investigation is needed. But from a perspective of the Indian community living
yes.
in New Zealand, they've reacted very well. They feel that the safety and the safety of all Kiwis is paramount to our country, and in that case, if it means stopping flights from India, if that is the measure that needs to be taken, if that's the tough measure, then it needs to be done, and everybody seems to be behind this.
Very nice to have you on, Robert. Thank you for that. That is Robert Kahn, the CEO at Radio Tirana. Well, gamification capabilities are coming to the COVID Tracer app in a bid to get more people scanning. After 14 consecutive days of scanning or diary entries, users will be awarded what's called a spiral success badge. So the app will now provide users with a reward for the first time they scan each day, a fixed interval reward, in the form of a visual indicator of building a reward streak, as is known. Now, the issue of rewards or the encouragement somehow of COVID app use has been much discussed previously, including here on the panel. The New Zealand COVID Tracer now has 2,776,116 registered users. And with us to discuss it is Dr. Andrew Chen, who's a research fellow with Koitū, the Centre for Informed Futures at the University of Auckland. Dr. Chen, welcome.
Kia ora, Wallace.
Yeah, kia ora. So, look, what do you make of this particular issue of gamificating capabilities?
Yeah, so I think that what the Ministry of Health has done here, they're pretty careful in how they introduce this gamification. Mm. The reward is pretty small, right? It's just like a little badge or achievement that shows up in the app, and it's not sort of dollars or free KFC vouchers or something like that. So they've been careful to sort of make the reward something, but not make it too great to incentivize excess mobility. I think the other thing is that they're sort of doing this during alert level one settings when you kind of do want people to be going out and about if they can. So the risks of sort of transmission being increased because of the gamification is sort of mitigated there as well.
Why we started talking about it, because actually when this came up on the panel a couple of months ago, it was surprisingly controversial. Quite a number of people contacted the panel and said that gamification shouldn't be the reason you're scanning in. That's not the reason why you should do it. And somehow, I don't know, ethically cheapens it, if you like.
Yeah, I think there are lots of reasons why people should or should not participate, and I can understand the people who are saying that gamification cheapens it from that sort of public health message. But I think a lot of people will respond positively to the types of features that have been added today. So there's an individual level statistic in terms of the number of days that you've scanned in or added a manual entry over the last 14 days. But there's also that national level statistic as well. And we've been getting daily numbers, but the app will now be showing you a live ticker of the number of QR code scans and the number of people participating in Bluetooth tracing live each day. So that will hopefully help people feel like that they are participating in something bigger. Especially, you know, people who are going around and they're doing it, but they're seeing that the people around them are not. I think that this can be a bit reassuring that there are lots of other people out there who are doing it, even if you don't see it.
Well, already quite a few suggestions coming through of what they'd like to see in terms of rewards. Perhaps they could add a game to the COVID app like Space Invaders, where you squirt the virus with a syringe as it attacks, and the highest score goes up the vaccination list.
Jump the queue.
Jump the queue. Anna Dean, what are your thoughts on this rewards, getting rewards, albeit a gold star, if you like, or whatever?
Yeah, I guess my main question was it publicly visible, and was there a shared leaderboard? Because then there's some kind of incentivising that way. But I actually would feel more satisfied, I think, about using my app if there was some kind of noise that my phone made, if I was doing a good job, and rather than just getting a little visual for me, if my phone was like, woohoo, what a champion, and clapped me, or every time I walked into a restaurant or something, I'd be into that.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think on that first point... I can't remember the first point now. But on the audio,
leaderboard.
Oh, sorry, the leaderboard. Yes, sorry, there is no leaderboard, unfortunately, because the sort of 14, how many days you scanned out of the last 14 is local to your device. So the Ministry of Health doesn't collect that information, so they can't sort of aggregate it centrally. The sound was something that the Ministry of Health did think about, consider a lot. I think they in the end decided that if everybody's phones were making noise all the time, it might get annoying and actually cause people to not scan in. So I think they sort of weighed that up and decided not to go with it.
That does make sense.
That's what I was thinking about. You know, that little pinger that goes in when you go into the dairy, you know, that ping to let you know that you've gone through the door. It'd be like that constantly when everybody time when everybody walked into a shop. And went, hello! Yay! Cheers! but it would give you the external validation. That's what you're getting at, eh, Anna? Mm. The sense that actually people are aware that you're doing the right thing, and so that actually encourages people to do something because they know that other people are aware that they're doing the right thing rather than just having to, you know, be satisfied with themselves.
So you'd agree with that?
Yeah. Well, I also, whether sound or anything else, it's the habit for me. I think I probably do it 80 or 90% of the time, but there's this few times when you're the phone isn't in your hand, it's somewhere else. There's some kind of your kids getting onto you. It's something that doesn't, you don't remember when you're at that particular point with the where the scan is. And so, yeah, whether there's a way of reminding you, prompting you when you go past when you enter a place with a QR code or something like that to remind you, because it's a memory thing, I think, for a lot of people.
Andrew, we discussed this on the panel, haven't we, just how crucial and important scanning is. Where would you like to see us get in terms of scanning? And do you think that this gamification capability will, in fact, really ramp people scanning up?
Yeah, so I think based on the modelling, we want at least 60% of adults in New Zealand participating. That converts to about 4 million QR code scans a day, or 2 million people participating in Bluetooth tracing. We're not really that close to those numbers, so I think the gamification will help a little bit, but probably it won't get us to that level that I was just talking about. I think the other thing to also note is that this sort of ticker of how many days in the last 14 that you've scanned in or done a manual entry. The idea is to help people build a habit, a daily habit. And one of the concerns that I've heard a lot today is people saying, well, sometimes I don't go out. Sometimes I've just stayed at home all day. What the Ministry of Health would like you to do is actually add a manual entry saying that you stayed at home. And the reason to do that is that if you end up getting COVID and you have to be interviewed by a contact tracer, you'll upload your diary to that contact tracer. And then you won't have a gap it'll say that on this day I was at home. If you don't have that in your diary at all, then the contact tracer has to ask you, oh, there seems to be no entries on the 26th of March. What happened on that day? And that just slows down the process. So people who are worried that, you know, they might not be able to complete their streak because they haven't been out every day, I would encourage them to go back and add a manual entry.
All right, Dr. Andrew Chen, thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Chen's from the University of Auckland. But the never underestimate the power of a little wee reward, right? And I mean, that's why we like Facebook or Twitter, because you might see that little red dot. Oh, gosh. You know, someone's noticed me.
That's right. And it's funny because walking around central Wellington today, what I was really wondering was that the yellow and white stripes just seem to have kind of blended into the background. And I was actually wondering if a big, bright new colour for the new season might be something that actually just catches the eye again, because it's kind of just gone into wallpaper. And QR codes are not nice to look at. And it's like, we need another jolt. We need a freshen up for the new season, I think.
And some of the QR codes are black and white printouts now as well. I'm seeing more of those. You know, so
and some of them are old and ratty, and you know they've been sun faded. It's like we just need to kind of freshen this up again.
And it is funny, those little things. I mean, I play a word game app game on my phone sometimes, and I find myself on there's like weekend tournaments and so forth, and you get into the top whatever, you get extra points for your. And you get a crown, and I find myself going, oh, I'll just play a couple more games, and then I'll get that crown. I'm like, it's a crown on an app on a phone.
Okay, there you go.
Cares?
So, it will work.
But it can
work. So you don't get chocolate fish or anything.
No, you just kind of look at myself and I go, what am I wasting my time on this for? For this crown that means nothing to anybody.
19 past four, the panel, RNZ National. Wallace, the Kiwi Lego was Better Blocks. We had a family friend who worked there, so I had some kids last century, but real Lego rocked. And that's not what I was thinking of. There's something even more famous than Better Blocks. And Simon in Wellington says, Mattel's Tough Stuff, toys from Greymouth. No, not Tough Stuff. Something even more famous than that. All will be revealed just after 4:30. To this, though, to Hawke's Bay, where devastated apple growers have had to leave thousands of tons of fruit on the trees. Across the country, horticulturists have been struggling to find seasonal workers who are, of course, shut out of the country at the moment due to COVID-19. And according to an article by Stuff reporter Esther Taunton, Hawke's Bay orchardist Bruce Mitchell had to leave apples to rot on the ground because there was no one to pick them. And the article says he's among hundreds of orchardists or exporters who've either left fruit on trees or not been able to pick it up at the right time. Talk about this. I'm joined by Paul Painter from the Yummy Fruit Company in Hawke's Bay. Paul, hello.
G'day.
Just listen to that. Is that the sentiment you're hearing or you side with? Devastated apple growers having to leave thousands of tons of fruit on the trees?
Well, that's definitely happened, but it's pretty simplistic. I mean, people say, how many apples have you still got on the tree? And I've got quite a few, probably 10% of the crop we'll leave behind, but we burnt our crop before it arrived. I mean, we saw this problem coming, so we pulled a couple of blocks out last year, we dropped a couple of leases, and when it came to chemical thinning, we thinned really hard, so we made the crop smaller so it was more manageable. So we've got a crop that's about 20% down on last year, and part of that is our own doing. About half of that's our own doing, and about half of that's lack of labour. But it's much better than leaving the fruit on the trees, because Bruce, I saw his orchard, it's unbelievable. It's got all this perfect fruit on the ground, and he basically had to walk away from it, and that's much more traumatic than getting rid of the crop a bit earlier on.
So if it was a normal year, you would be doing, what, more than 20% more fruit than you've picked so far? In a normal year, if you hadn't done those?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for the industry in Hawke's Bay, Paul?
Oh, well, I think the first casualty will be Main Street. I mean, I think that the industry is saying the crop's going to be down 14%. I think that's really conservative. It'll be more than that. But that equates to about $130 million out of the industry. Almost 70% of the industry is Hawke's Bay. So it'll be, say, $100 million out of our Main Street economy, which we'll really feel.
70% of the industry is Hawke's Bay, but Anna, you're from and in part of the country where, you know, fruit picking is a huge part of the economy, really, isn't it, in the Nelson Golden Bay area?
It absolutely is. Mm. And, I mean, it's a tricky slope when we get into burning up orchards and clearing yeah. them. I mean, I know where my parents live in Appleby, the orchards have been slowly demolished and, you know, these kind of instant suburbs have been growing everywhere. And it's this kind of agricultural background that really needs to be protected. I actually picked apples for a season once and I got this incredible thigh muscle definition that I'd never had before. So I was wondering, there must be kind of like CrossFit classes, fitness freaks, legions of boomers on e-bikes or something that could be activated like a student army style, you know, kind of helicopter in to actually help out here?
Paul?
Well, we've had a few Ironman contestants
Brilliant.
Before, and they've kind of worked 12-hour days, just running the whole time, picking out an unbelievable number of bins.
Amazing.
And the problem these days is the new labour laws say we have to tell them to stop and have a paid break.
I see.
Is that a problem?
Well, it is for them because they say I'm in training, I don't want to stop, and I'm going. Labour laws say you must stop and have a paid break.
Tim.
Paul, I'm just curious about your attitude to this. You seem relatively sanguine at this point. Have there been months of fury to this? Because I actually have, you know, real sympathy for that. This seems in many ways like a slow motion car crash, right? Mm-hmm. We've known about this for the best part of a year. We've seen it coming. We've been debating it. Is it just that people are resigned, or is there still a real anger that something wasn't sorted out in the months that we had?
Oh, I think so. I have to say I felt much worse a couple of months ago because it's like human nature doesn't deal with uncertainty, and so I was very stressed, and it was a really difficult time. Now I know exactly what I've got, and I've sort of come to terms with it. So it's a tragedy I've learnt to live with. But I think that there were some decisions made by government with the best intentions. They thought, well, what we'll do is we'll redeploy people from other parts of the country and provide some incentives, and they're quite generous incentives. But what we didn't take account for was the lack of mobility of some of that workforce. I mean, if you're a fit young Polynesian man in South Auckland, you don't necessarily want to leave your community and your family and everything and come to Hawke's Bay to pick apples for 10 weeks. And then, of course, we had the lockdown, which meant they couldn't do so. So there were a lot of things that got in the road of that. And even if you did want to come, I had a lot of people ring me and say, have you got any accommodation? And, of course, Hawke's Bay's got a real crisis with emergency housing.
Ah, that's
so
interesting.
Unfortunately, we've got people living in the park. So in previous years, we would have had the backpackers, and that's probably been 35% of our labour force in this season. They've arrived. They've looked at our orchard, gone, you've got a couple of showers and a couple of toilets and a washing machine. Can I just put my van here or pitch my tent? And so they've kind of lived rough, and that's helped us escape the accommodation problem in Hawke's Bay, those backpackers. But Kiwis want beds, and I get that because I really love my bed. So we haven't had the ability to house people because there's simply not enough accommodation.
Right.
And even that accommodation that was being used for RSEs previously, nobody knew what was happening there, so couldn't sign up to the contracts with the accommodation providers, so they just rented them to WINS, and they've been used for emergency housing.
Paul, thanks for explaining the situation to us, and appreciate it. That is Paul Painter there from the Yummy Fruit Company in Hawke's Bay, and look, I know because I too have lived in Nelson, and I did quite a bit of it in my teenage years. You know, some of that fruit picking, right? But for me, it was raspberry picking.
Mm.
Very, very scratchy across the day, particularly when the leaves were, sort of a bit wet in the morning. But give us an insight into just how tough apple picking actually is or was.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, they're very heavy, those baskets that you
because
have to
take. The bags are around your waist, is that right?
Yeah, and around your waist, over your shoulders, and you have to go up and down these ladders all day. So it's basically like just one giant step class. You know, you're racing against the clock because you want to fill your big bin, but you also have to do it quite carefully because you can't put finger marks on the apples. You can't
bruise the fruit.
Can't bruise the fruit. And it was funny. I mean, one by one, day by day, you'd kind of see people just having had enough. They hit the wall, they'd throw their ladder down and they'd walk off and they wouldn't come back.
Really?
And it is interesting. Yeah, I have been hearing because the hot hop harvest has also been going on in Nelson at the moment, and have heard these, you know, people have just been offered more and more money from the neighbouring businesses. So it's been incredibly competitive. But I do know they were quite successful in Nelson because they did have a very good organised website where you could sign up. I actually looked at it and thought about it because I was like, oh, this would be a good option. And the bonuses were actually fantastic. If you completed the time, instant $1,000 bonus, and
what's the hardest fruit or veggie to pick? Is it potatoes? Ooh. Tim, what have you picked?
God, no, I haven't picked. I'm trying to remember.
Well, you must have picked something.
I'm sure. I do have memories of apple picking, but I think it was only for a day or two. I'm trying to think. Mm. Was it just helping out somewhere or something? No, I've done, you know, backbreaking. I remember installing little ties underneath concrete poured building sites and so forth, where you're bending over the whole time trying for underfloor heating. That was one of the.
I'll tell you what else is very hard. I'll tell you what else is very hard to pick.
Winners,
pumpkins,
tomatoes.
Oh,
because
really?
Because of the fumes in the hothouse.
Oh.
A day of tomatoes, I tell you. Anyway, people want to know. I'm going to put you out of your misery in terms of what was the New Zealand version of Lego. So get this: Toro Toys. Toro Toys added Lego-like blocks to nuts and bolts construction components in the 1970s. Michael emailed us. It was eventually
Michael.
Yeah. It was eventually taken over by PDL and manufactured by the bucket load at a Westport factory, where 24-hour shifts were required to meet the demand in many markets, including the US.
And what happened? Why did we let that
golden goose
go to the Danes?
We'll tell you tomorrow. We'll follow it up. What happened to the story of the Toro toy?
Curse those Danes and their Lego.
Yeah. It is 28 past four, the panel RNZ National. Just a bit of a word on this. The piece that caught our eye by columnist Eleanor Margolis, that lockdown is easing and that's a relief, but there's a very strong chance we may all have forgotten how to socialise. Eleanor writes, small talk is becoming more and more of an olden day skill, like butter churning or identifying witches. Is there any room for chit-chat about the weather when the entire world has just experienced the same traumatic event? So writing from a UK perspective there, around the panel.
Well, I think that's where we can answer that, right? And that we've actually, I mean, in a much more abbreviated way, I do remember that coming out of lockdown after a couple of months and that feeling that the bubble was more than just something that burst straight away. There were some quite hard walls around the bubble and it did take a bit of getting used to going back into society. But I don't think that lasts. So I think, you know, Eleanor can be, I don't think we're anywhere near butter churning. That small talk will be back within weeks. People get used to that again very quickly.
Anna?
I was in a solo bubble actually and it was great. It was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. But I did find when I ventured out, I mean, it was actually for me, it was more the kind of physical proximity that I was a bit worried about, and making conversation was fine, but I think these people should be more worried about STIs.
Because people will
just
dive back in.
They'll be going straight past the small talk and they'll be, I've seen some commentary, it's just going to be like the roaring 20s. And, when people actually get out there, they're going to be so just wanting to dance, wanting to party,
connect.
Wanting to drink, wanting to connect, yes.
Yeah. In terms of small talk on a general scale, are you the sort of person who is very comfortable with jumping into a deep conversation? Are you good at small talk? And when you go to a party, do you go up to someone and go, how are you?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say how are you. I actually really...
yeah, you amateur, Wallace.
I don't know, I'm not good at it.
Come on. Range of game, boy.
what do I say? Have you heard the latest? What's happening in Hungary?
Anna, you got your small talk A game.
Okay,
come on, Anna.
You've
got a brand now.
I'm going to actually, save that. Mm-hmm. Save that. I want to ask you about this. Mm-hmm. You're on the panel, RNZ National. We are with Tim Watkin and Anna Dean this afternoon, and it's time for the headlines with Marama Te Pule.